Everyone, it's Mark Alcoholic. And my sobriety date is December 20th, 1998. And that's because of good sponsorship, going to lots of meetings, having no idea what I'm doing, but showing up anyways. And grace of God got me here. And thanks, Sam, for asking me up here. I was trying to figure out last time I was up here. It was about 4 or 5 years ago. And Jeff was kind enough to keep me thinking about myself all the way up. I said if I gave a bad talk, he's going to listen to another one on the way back. So we'll see how it goes. But came up here 4 or 5 years ago. It was a little guy I was sponsoring, and he died. He fell off a roof drunk. I'm not sure what the whole story is there, but it's kind of funny how some of us make it here and some of us don't. It's kind of sad. And that's why I love coming up and talking. I love talking about alcoholism, you know, because you have to think you don't have it in order to have it. You know, you have to think I'm not that bad. I don't need to do anything. You know, alcoholism is the most cunning, baffling thing. And, you know, if you go to you know, a friend of mine's got cancer, right? And he goes to the doctor, he gets chemotherapy, he follows the doctor's directions. Not only does he follow it, he does more than he's supposed to. Because he wants to try to beat cancer. He doesn't want to die. You tell someone they're alcoholic and say, go to me. He's like, no way. Do an inventory. I'm not that bad. Stop drinking. Well, let's not get crazy now, right? You know, my mind sits there and works against me in alcoholism. It's the only thing that does it, you know? I got sober when I was 25, and at 25, you can't be an alcoholic. You're too young to be alcoholic. I'm too Irish to be alcoholic, you know? I never got to go to a rehab center. I can't be alcoholic, you know? But my mind always tells me why I don't fit in. And it's the only illness that does that. And, you know, I grew up in Jersey. And in Jersey, you go to the Brooklyn Bridge, you see the drunks. They're living on the street, drinking out brown paper bags, and I'm like, that's an alcoholic. You know, if I ever get that bad, then I'll quit drinking. And, you know, luckily, you know, the big book tells us what it is a little bit, you know. It's, you can't control the amount you drink. And I never really understood that. I didn't want to control my drinking anyways. Even though I was like the designated driver, I'm like, 10-pack is fine, and then that's controlled drinking for the night. But, you know, can you have like 2 or 3 beers and stop? You know, do that like 15, 20 times. You know, I can count my hand how many times I've done it, and I'll stick to those. But, you know, on a regular basis, I can't go have 2 or 3 beers and stop. And then they say, once you start, can you control the amount you drink? And, you know, I remember coming out of blackouts still drinking, you know. The idea, once I started, I was off the races. You know, the idea of having 2 or 3 was just never any fun. And they're like, you might be alcoholic. And, but what I really didn't know is alcoholism starts when you stop drinking. You know, my whole life, I didn't feel like I fit in. And that's like, you know, you don't feel like you fit in, you drink, you belong here. You know, no one else does that. You know, my brother didn't feel like he fit in. What'd he do? He gets a different job. He fits in now. He's perfectly happy, you know. I never felt like I fit in. And, you know, my whole life, I never felt like I fit in. I started drinking. I was a late bloomer. I probably started drinking in middle school, you know, 13, 14. And, I'm a blackout drinker, so some people say if you don't remember your last drunk you're going to have, you don't remember your, I can't remember anything, you know, I can't remember last week, and my first drunk, I don't remember where it is. I've narrowed it down to 3 places in 3 different countries, and I don't know which one came first, but they're all the same. I drank, I blacked out, and somewhere around 5 or 6 beers, whatever it was, life got really simple, and life got really good. I was happy just to be me, because all before the time I was drinking, I was always, well, what do you think about me? How do I fit in? You know, I got this stuff in my head that tells me I just, I'm not quite right. I'm, you know, when I drank, all that stuff went away. I could relax. I could talk to anybody. I was having a good time. I didn't have a care in the world. I'm like, this is great. You know, I want to keep drinking. You know, what a great thing. If I could just stay at this level my whole life, you know, life would be great. But I can't stay at that level because once I start drinking, I'm off to the races. And I didn't start drinking every day. You know, my dad was 6'2". He's in Vietnam. There are rules in the house, and the rules are simple. You follow them or get out. And so you follow them. So what do you learn to do? I learned a lot. And I'm a great liar. You know, it's not a great quality to have. You know, I can't put on a resume, but I can lie to you at a drop of a hat. You know, I don't know, about 10 years ago, my alarm clock didn't go off. And, you know, so I had to go to work, and my boss called me up. And he said, where are you? I'm like, got a flat tire. I'm like, I'm not even awake, and I'm lying. You know, it's like my first reaction is to lie if I'm in trouble. And I was good at it, so I started lying to my parents, and I go out, and I'm going to drink and do the things I want to do, and simply because I want to just feel better. You know, I think I have a choice of it all. I think I'm just going out to have a good time, but really, I just want to break from myself. I want to feel like I fit in. I want to be able to relax, and normal people don't drink to relax. You know, they just, you know, some people go exercise. They go play sports. You know, they watch a movie. That relaxes them. Me, I needed a drink to relax, you know. I couldn't just kick back and do nothing. And so my high school career was, how can I lie and get away with stuff? And in my family, we all go to college. So I went to college. I had no idea why I was going to college. I found out that's abnormal. You know, I talk to my people now. They're like, oh, I want to go to college. I want to have this type of degree. I want to do this. People are like, why are you going to college? I don't want to drink. You know, I want to get away from my parents. I'm going to go drink. And so, you know, I went to college, and I found the people that drank like I did. You know, the first night, like, where can we get booze? Who's got the fake ID? Where are we going? Who's got this stuff? Who's got that stuff? And those were my roommates for 4 years. And on a regular basis, we just went and drank. And I blacked out. You know, I didn't realize blacking out was abnormal. You know, I thought you drink, you black out. That's just what everybody does. And when I got here, you said blacking out's not normal. I'm like, you're lying. So I started calling up my non-alcoholic friends. I'm like, look, we used to drink together. Like, did you black out? They're like, no. I'm like, well, what happened? They're like, well, we get a buzz going, and then I'd stop. I switch over to water. I'm like, wait, you're a wuss. Let's go ask somebody else. I'm like, they got to be lying. And consistently, these people would tell me what happened when they black out. They get scared. You know, they feel like they're out of control. They get anxious, and they wake up the next morning scared to death what they did. And I'm a blackout drinker. You kind of get used to not missing, you know, missing 7-8 hours at a time. You wake up, where's the car? How much money do you have in your pockets? I smoked at the time. Got any cigarettes left? You kind of look at some tabs to see where you were. You know, you look at your car, there's no dents on it, so it must have been okay. And you get used to that. People are like, you know what you did last night? You're like, no, no idea. You know, how bad was it? Or was it a good time? And I'm a blackout drinker. And that's because alcohol does something for me, right? Once I start drinking, I'm off to the races. And I love being drunk. And if I could be drunk maybe one day a week, I'd probably still do it. It just doesn't work that way. Within those 4 years, I became a daily drinker. And my justification is, what else are you going to do in college? You know, it doesn't matter. I was a 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, bar drinker. I loved, like, the soap operas and Days of Our Lives, and it was terrible. And just some shady bars you've been into that you never go into. I know decent pre-mates, like, you know, if you're alcoholic, come here at 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, you know. Those are the buddies I hung out with. You go to class sometimes, you go there, and you know, at one point in time, I came back early from the summer because you can't drink at home the way you want to. And so I go back early to college. And within a week, I get written up for drinking in the dorm. And I get they're like, you may want to take a semester off. And like, when you have problems, I used to always drink when I was uptight. So I go to the bar, got drunk, passed out in the street, woke up in jail from a blackout, called my mom in jail from a blackout. That wasn't good. Called 911 from jail in a blackout. Don't know how that happened. And that's my first week back. And it's not a good week. And so my dad calls me up. He's like, you know what you did last night? And I'm like, he has no idea what I did. He's in Jersey. I'm in Philly. You know, there's no way he could possibly know what I did last night. So if I called him, maybe it was at like 5 before I got arrested and all this stuff. I'm like, no, because you got to start lying and covering your bases already. He's like, I'll tell you what, we'll see you in a couple of days. We've got to talk to the dean. Don't call us, we'll call you. Don't come home anytime soon. And you better apologize to your mom when you see her. Bye. I'm like, that's pretty bad, you know. And 19 years old and kicked out of the house. And my dad comes down 2 days later. They don't talk to me. They go take the heat from the dean for me so I can stay in college because my family, you don't drop out of college due to drinking. Just kind of frowned on anywhere, I guess. And they left. I'm like, this is pretty serious for being 19 years old, you know. 48 hours later, I'm like, this isn't so bad. I don't have to call them anymore. You know how hard it is to stay sober on Sunday till 5 o'clock to call them once a week? I don't have to do that anymore. I'm like, you know, you got Labor Day coming up. I don't have to go home. I can just stay here and drink all weekend. You know, and then like within 48 hours, my mind justifies that it's not that big of a deal. I'm going to go back out drinking again. You know, give me 48 hours, I will justify any consequence or any trouble I got into drinking. That's just my pattern. No matter how bad it got, 48 hours as far as I can make it before my mind said, it wasn't really that bad. Let's think about this in a different light. And I'll twist anything around where, you know, I'll take the consequence, live with it, and I'll go drink again. And so I started drinking again. As a result of that, I took a lot of alcohol classes. Got a standing ovation because I drank the most. And, you know, you're in college, you're a guy, period. The more you drink, the cooler you are. I don't know why it works that way, but it does. And what I did, we went to class, they're like, let's count how many days you drink. I'm like, this will be great. You know, sitting with a couple of buddies of mine who got arrested together, so we're all hanging out, get drunk beforehand, show up at this stuff. I'm like, you know, weekends, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in college, you start on Thursday. That's like 200 days right there. And think Paddy Days, Christmas, Super Bowl Sunday, whatever. And we start adding up the days. And I'm like, you know, like, how many you got? I'm like, I got 294, you know. My buddy's like, I got 312. And I was pissed at him. I'm like, I got to recount. I'm going to beat you, you know. You know, and then they start saying, you know, if you drink more than 35 days out of the year, you're probably alcoholic, you know. And I'm like 390. I'm like, you know, 320, whatever it was. I'm like, I really didn't care, though. You know, it was a big joke. No matter what anyone told me, I'm just thinking I'm having a good time drinking. And it's really none of your business, so I ain't going to listen to you anyways. To me, it's just useless information. The police sent me to a class, and they talk about the heroin-like substance in your brain that's released. And I don't know if it's true or not, I really don't care. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when you're ripped at a bar, you lean to the person next to you and go, let me tell you why I'm an alcoholic and why I'm here. I got the stuff in my brain I can't control. And they just kind of look at you funny and go back to Days of Our Lives, you know. There's some weird places there. But I graduate college. By the time I got my hair down to here, my dad called me his other daughter when I came home because he was in the military. And it was between coming home or cutting your hair, so I'm being the good alcoholic. And finally said, I won't come home. And my mom said, you better come home. I want to see you. So I'm like, all right, you know. And after college, working 4 hard years, what do? Go back to my summer job. My dad's like, that's a great job, you know, putting fences and landscaping. You're going to do that for a career. That's great. But why'd I pay for you to go to college? That's one of those. Why do you even ask me that question? I have no answer. I got a 13-year-old son, and every now and then I say, why'd you do that? I'm like, never mind. You have no idea why he did. You know, let's not even go there. And so my job was, the only reason I liked this job was we started drinking at noon. You know, my buddy Raj, you know, he's a fence worker and landscaper, and about noon he'd come around and start passing out beers. And from noon to like 8 o'clock at night, we'd just get ripped, you know. And so my life revolves around alcohol, and I don't even know it. I'm sitting there going, I'm 23 years old. What's the big deal? What else are you going to do at 23 years old and drink and have a good time? This is what you do. You know, this is why you go to college. Find out my perception of the world is completely off, but that's the way it goes. And so sooner after a while, your parents start asking you questions like, what do you want to do with your life? And those are tough questions, you know. And what are you going to do when you grow up? You know, why is the bed wet in the morning? And, you know, and when are you going to get a haircut? So I did what any good alcoholic was. I moved to Virginia and got a job. Cut my hair and I came down here. I worked in Buckingham, Virginia, where I got sober. And that's where I met Billy and Sam way back when. But I wasn't sober then. But my job was 5 days a week, 24 hours a day, working with troubled kids. You know, and I'm good at what I do. Most alcoholics are good jobs. I was a great worker. So 5 days a week, 24 hours a day, I'm sober. I get off work Friday at 10. You know, I know where the local little gas station is, right by Gillum Motors, and I go in there, pick a six-pack, you know, a little four-pack of Jack Daniel bottles and a six-pack of beer, drink that on the way home to Farmville. And by that time, I could get in, like, good 4 drunks on a 48-hour period. You know, you pass out by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, you come to at 8, drink again, pass out somewhere around 2 or 3. Next morning, you wake up and pass out again and, you know, go back to work Sunday. I'm like, I just drank for 48 hours because I'm like, what else do you do? You know, I mean, it's Farmville, for God's sake. So you'd be drinking, too, if you lived there. There's nothing. You know, but then it's like, I remember the first time I drank the people I worked with. I show up with a case of Milwaukee's Best, because back then it was like $9 for a case of Tall Boys. And, you know, after the first 3 or 4, it all tastes the same anyways. And I show up, and these guys, like, bring six-packs. I'm like, what are you drinking tonight? Like, I got a six-pack. I'm like, yeah, what are you drinking tonight? You know, because I get worried. You know, I'm drinking my case of beer. I got maybe 1 or 2 to spare, but I'm putting down 2022. And they're like, that's all we're drinking. I'm like, I got to find some other drinkers, right? You always find the alcoholics because then you can all drink the same, you know? And so I went and found my alcoholic buddies I drank with when I was there. And, you know, after a while, you know, I got promoted because I was good at my job. And so it's not like, how can I do my better job? It's how can I drink on a nightly basis and still do my job? And so I get off work at like 10 o'clock at night, hit the bar by 11, pass out by 2:33 in the morning, get up at 6:30 and go to work. And never missed a day of work in my life. Show up late, stinking of booze, but I never missed. And that's just the way you get used to. You know, I start thinking everybody lives this way. Everyone's going home and drinking. I just have to later start at 10 because you guys are going home at 6 and you're drinking. Because what else do you do on a nightly basis? My mind always told me that it's normal to drink the way I did. You know, I never sat there and said, this is too much. I'm getting out of hand. This is a normal way people drink. And that's abnormal to be sober and not drink during the week. And really all I did was drink more and more every night. You know, I came up with different plans on how I was going to get sober. And it was always, I don't really want to get sober. I just want to stop getting in trouble. So figure out a new way. I have a toothbrush at work. Okay. Smoke a pipe on the way to work to cover up the smell of booze. You know, have more deodorant at work because that makes it smell better. You know, after a while, I started bringing beer in the car, just put it in the cooler all day long and drink on the way home. And, you know, every now and then I'd get in trouble. You know, I'd get out of hand in a small workplace because you work and drink with the same people. And they'd say, you're drinking too much. And I'd get sent to my boss. And my boss was my first sponsor, actually. We just tell drinking stories. And he's like, you black out. I'm like, yeah, all the time. He's like, me too. I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, let's go to concerts drunk. Yeah. I'm like, do you only go to places that serve beer? I'm like, yeah. He's like, does alcohol, do you always have alcohol? I'm like, probably. Like, you go canoeing in a case of beer. Yeah. Kayaking in a case of beer. Hiking in a flask, you know. It's like, everywhere I go, I'm drinking. And he's like, I'm sober. I'm like, I'm not. You know? I'm like, you're old, you know. You should be sober, you know. I'm not that old yet, you know. He's like, I got DUIs. I'm like, not me. And it just means I didn't get caught. I drove drunk everywhere. You know, one of my favorite things to do at a station wagon one time was drive drunk in the snow because you're swerving anyway. You throw a keg in the back and go visit people, you know. And I just never got caught. There's many times I couldn't drive home. Don't remember driving home. I remember, you know, if I get pulled over tonight, I'm not even going to try the breathalyzer. I'm just going to hop in the back of the police car because I can't even stand, you know. And so I just got lucky. You know, I didn't get the consequences. In my last year of drinking, it really wasn't that exciting. You know, there were times I knew I was getting out of hand. And what would happen is I'd wake up, I'd go to work at 6:30, 7 in the morning, I'd be like, I can't drink today, I need a night off. You know, it's been like 25 days in a row now or something like that. I'm like, I just need a break. This is getting out of hand. And so I'm like, tonight I'm going to stay sober. And here's my plan on how to stay sober today. You know, and I come up with a plan. And I'd be walking around work all day, and people ask tough questions like, how are you doing? That, when you're drinking, or even early sobriety, that's a tough question. I'm like, do they really want to know? I mean, do they want to know how nuts I am in my head right now? And I don't feel like I fit in. I can't stand life. I can't stand people. I hate this stuff. And I think I got to drink or I'm going to die. And do they really want to hear this? I'm like, they don't know. No. So I'd be there like for 30 seconds. They'd be like, you okay? I'm like, yeah. I just keep going, you know. So those are tough questions. How are you doing? And so by 5 o'clock, I'm like, I can go back, you know, I can really take 40 hours. By 5 o'clock, I'm like, it really wasn't that bad this morning. You know, I'm not that bad. I'll just go and have a, you know, just go stop by the bar and have a beer or two. And a beer or two always turned into 15, 20, whatever it was. And, you know, every now and then I'd switch to, like, I used to drink Merlot. So I'm like, you can't be an alcoholic and drink Merlot. You know, it's like 3 bottles before noon kind of qualifies, I guess, you know. But I go to the bar and, by this time, my bartender knew me, and I never wanted to leave my bartender at midnight, so I'd stay till it closed. I thought you'd get lonely, because I get attached to my bartenders wherever I go. And so I go to the bar, and they have shots of Goldschlager lined up for me, and a pitcher of beer, and a cheesesteak. And that was what I did every day. You know, and the people I worked with would come in, they look at me, because I was an angry drunk sometimes. They kind of wait for the first half pitcher and shots to go down to see if I'm going to be a happy drunk or an angry drunk. And they kind of dictate whether they were going to talk to me or not. And I think this is normal. You know, I'm like, this isn't a big deal. You know, I'm just having a few beers after work. I still show up to work every day. But that last year, just, you know, drinking wasn't fun anymore. You know, drinking used to be a lot of fun. But now it's like, I just drank to black out. Because I did not answer that question, how you doing? What's going on in your life? I couldn't answer that, you know, because I just felt, being sober was so painful. You know, I had a big hole in my stomach, in my chest. I didn't know how to be sober. I didn't know how to get along with people. I didn't know how to talk to people. I didn't make relationships. My mail was all different colors because the bills were late. And I'm just like, I hate people who just come and say, how are you doing? You know, let's talk about sports all day long. Let me keep you at a distance. You know, how you doing? I'm goofy. You know, that just keeps people off their back, you know. And I go out and get drunk every night because I just got to stop thinking. And I don't know what's wrong. Every now and then I'd like quit drinking, you know, I'd have like a couple days, you know, people are like, you're doing good. You're 2 days sober. You know, you changed your clothes before work. You showered. You don't stink of booze. You're on time. And I'm like, I'm 2 days sober. This sucks. I'm like, if this is sobriety, you can have it. You know, I ain't going to make a week like this. This is just painful. You know, I'm not happy at all about this. And one of the guys I worked with used to say, I'll buy a case of beer, you show up on time, you know. Like, those people just don't get us, you know. They just, they want to find other problems, you know. They'll be like, why'd you drink? Broke with my girlfriend. Like, oh, okay. You know, I drank when things were good and bad. It didn't matter. Give me an excuse, I'll drink. And towards the end, people say, why'd you get drunk last night? It was Tuesday. And I'd be like, I don't know. And, you know, non-alcoholics, they want a reason why you're drinking the way you're drinking. It makes them feel better. You know, if I'm drunk because of a death or a family issue or a girlfriend, like, oh, we understand. You know, I drink, doesn't matter. Rain, sunshine, happy, sad, I'm going to get drunk. And so I'd probably tell them the most honest thing I could. I said, I just don't know why I'm drinking. Can't stop, don't really want to. Not that bad yet, don't really know where I'm going. And I was getting close to being fired. I was talking to my boss probably once a month at this point. We're just telling drunk stories, and I get all excited. We're telling drunk stories, and then I go get drunk, and I'm like, oh, well. I drink old duels every now and then. And I don't know why I ever did that, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. And finally, a good friend of mine was leaving work, and so what we did, we drank to celebrate. So we started drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning. At 10 o'clock in the morning, the only place that serves alcohol is bowling alleys. And so we go drink at the bowling alley. I black out about 2, come to about 4, black out about 6, come to about 8. And I thought it was one of my better behaved drunks. You know, I didn't drive. I didn't curse anybody out. I didn't puke on anybody. I had money. You know, I thought I was pretty good. Going to work the next day, a good friend of mine is just like, it's like, dude, I'm sick of you. You know, you're supposed to be, you know, by this time I was one of the senior supervisors at the place. So I was good at work. You know, I was running the place responsible for, you know, 100 people or so because we're good workers when we show up and do what we got to. He's like, I'm just sick of hanging out with you. You know, I'm sick of defending you. I'm sick of working with you. He just gave me a speech. You know, I've heard the speech before. You know, we all get the speeches from families and friends. But, you know, this time I was just kind of done. You know, I don't know why that morning, but I just, there's no friendly place left to turn. You know, I tried to quit drinking. I tried different solutions to try to stop drinking. At that point, I tried exercise. I tried church. I tried switching weekends. I drank beer, drank alcohol, drank wine, you know, hung out with different people, tried biking more. I tried everything just kind of fix my life because I just couldn't keep going the way I was going. I was just tired. And so this morning, I remember my boss, you know, he was gone somewhere else. He said, give me a call when you're ready. And so I called him up. It was like 10 in the morning. You know, I was hungover. I was sick. And I said, look, I'm ready. And he picked me up, and he brought me up to Charlottesville to some Mexican restaurant. Don't ever take a newcomer to Mexican. It just looks terrible when you're hungover and drunk still. But he liked Mexican, and, you know, I was still drunk from the night before, you know, a couple days drinking. And, you know, I was still drunk, felt like crap, going through detox, whatever. And he's like, are you done drinking? And I'm like, I knew what he meant, because, you know, how many people tell you, you're done. Oh, I'm going to stop, I swear. I'm on the wagon, I'm off the wagon. I always get confused with those two. And, you know, I always tell people I'm going to cut back, you know. But I'm like, yeah, I'm done. And this time I really was done. He's like, you believe in God? I'm like, no, I don't believe in God. And that's just the way I, you know, I don't know why I was brought Catholic. For some reason, us Catholics who come here don't believe in God. I don't know why that is. But I was an altar boy. I stole the Eucharist, drank the wine, used the Bible for rolling papers. You know, I figure if God exists, I'm kind of dead. I like to argue in church, in bars, you know. Prove to me he exists, you know. And so the God questioned, he's like, well, do you think I'm sober and I'm living better than you? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, good, let's just move on because you're too screwed up to think about that right now. And he's like, you're going to follow directions here. I'm like, sure. You know, because I had no other answers, you know. And my buddy Bill, I brought up, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. I love Bill to death. We made through inventory, never made through amends because, you know, I think he didn't. He still had to try some answers out for himself. You know, he went back out for 4 or 5 months before he left us. And I'm just so blessed that I came with no answers left. You know, I'm trying to work with a guy now. I'm like, you know, let's go read the book. Let's go to more meetings. He's like, I'm busy. I'm like, that's fine. I can't help you then. You know, I don't have answers for you. I know it worked for me. When I came here, if you told me to stand upside down during a meeting, I would have done it. I would have cursed you anyways. But, you know, like, well, I have no other idea how to stay sober. You know, at this point in my life, you know, I hated being sober. I hated being drunk. And I'm like, if I can just be sober and somewhat miserable, that's better than anything else I got. Because at this point in my life, it was just miserable. You know, I was going to get close to being fired from my job. Didn't really talk to my parents or friends anymore because, you know, how much can you lie? What'd you do this weekend? I can't remember. I've been drunk for 48 hours. What do you want to know? How's those questions are going? How are you doing today? I mean, those just got so painful. I didn't even want to talk about it anymore, you know? And so I came here, and then, you know, people are like, show up an hour early before a meeting. I'm like, why? I hate talking to people. I don't want to be here an hour early. It's like, what else are you doing? I'm like, nothing, you know? You drink 8 hours a day. I got a lot of free time all of a sudden. And so we go to that meetings an hour early. We stay late. And I'm like, this sucks. You know, I'd be sitting in meetings, and I'd be like, my stomach be eating tums by the handful. I'd be like, I hate praying, you know? But it's like, I came because I had nowhere else to go. And all of a sudden, I start hearing the stories you guys tell me. I start relating. I'm like, you feel that big empty gut inside. Yeah. You drink the way I did. Pretty much. You know, I found the similarities instead of the differences. I came here and said, you know, what are we going to do here to get sober instead of, let me come here and judge people so I don't have to do this stuff. And he, you know, about 3 months sober, he said, when do you want to feel better? I said, now. He said, good, go write your inventory. I don't know how to write inventory. He said, you know, and what he did was, I'll give you 2 weeks. So the night before it was due, I wrote it. You know, I do that with all my guys I sponsor. Why don't we just set a date because we're all going to write the night before. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be perfect. And I did my inventory. And I remember after doing my inventory, I didn't feel so different anymore. And probably for about a half hour, I was happy to be sober. And that's probably the first time, about 5 months, I was happy to be sober. I got a little relief thinking, maybe this is going to work. Because before that, I'd go to meetings and I'd be like, well, this just sucks, and I'll be up till 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, doing nothing but playing video games and just watching bad TV because I couldn't sleep. My mind's just racing all the time. You know, and the question, how are you doing, was a still tough question to answer because I'm going to lie to you. I'm not telling you the truth. But you guys shared what it's like to be sober. I'm like, that's me. Yeah, that's me too. And he said, let's do this stuff, and we'll help you feel better. And so I did my inventory. Yeah, an hour after inventory, I started thinking again. So, you know, but I knew I got hope here. You know, one thing AA has is tons of hope. You know, if you've got a problem, you've been in a situation, someone's here has been through it. They've been through it sober. They can tell you step by step how to get through it and what to do. I always think I'm unique and no one understands me and you don't have my problems, and that's just not true enough. Guy I sponsor now, you know, he's sober 30 years. He's like, I went to AA for 5 years, didn't like anybody. No one was like me. Finally went to a meeting where a guy wore cufflinks. I was in there with my cufflinks, and I knew I belonged, you know? We all find someone who tells our story. We all just think we're a little bit unique, but, you know, stick here long enough, someone's going to tell your story and get you to belong. And I started making amends to people. And, you know, I flew to Chicago, made amends to my parents, made amends to my boss, the people there. And they're all pretty easy. I didn't steal. You know, I wasn't a stealer, but it's like, I wouldn't show up for Christmas, I wouldn't show up for holidays. I just kind of disappeared from people's lives. And so I had a lot of emotional amends to make, saying, you know what, sorry I haven't been part of your life for the last 5 years. I've been busy drinking. And it was a little bit hard. I'm much easier to write a check saying, here you go. Stole money, here you go, leave me alone. But I make those amends. And as a result of that, they put me in charge of the place I was working at. And so, you know, they said, you're honest, you're trustworthy, you're showing up on time now. We like what you're doing. And so they promoted me. And so I worked there for a few years. And I went and worked for my first sponsor. He had a place. I worked there. It's always entertaining working for your sponsor because he's like, how you doing today? I'm like, all right. He's like, you thinking about you? I'm like, well, I am now. I appreciate it. And he looked around like, you know why you're different? I'm like, no, it's because you are. And, you know, like, what are you talking about? But it was fun. And I met my wife down in Buckingham. She got sober. And we dated, and we got married, and we moved to Richmond. And, you know, we had a good time in Buckingham. I did jail meetings there, which we went to 4 or 5 meetings a week, started sponsoring some people and things like that. Drove to Charlottesville for meetings here and there. And, you know, really learned out a good foundation. I went to Richmond. They didn't do it right. People didn't reach out. You know, they were unfriendly, in my opinion. They still don't do it right, but I don't care anymore. But I moved to Richmond. I didn't have a job. You know, I had my wife and my son. You know, we got married there. And when I first got there, it's like I didn't have a job. And that was tough for me because my ego was tied to my paycheck. And if I'm not making money, I'm not a good man. I'm not providing for my family. And that was tough to deal with. Some mornings I couldn't get out of bed. I'd be too depressed. I don't know why. Just self-centered. And, you know, people would say, just go to more meetings. Now you're not working. You can go to new meetings, right? And so I go to new meetings. And I learned, I do what you people told me to do. I found a bunch of newcomers, and I got their numbers. And I call them, like, every day. I think half of them didn't even come to AA more than once. But I'd be calling them up 3 weeks later. Hey, how you doing? Let's go to a meeting, you know? And I got through it, and I finally found a job. But, you know, it was tough. But you guys told me, here's what you're going to do during this time. And it was doable. And at my job, I, you know, it was a part-time job beginning, but you told me how to do this. You show up early, stay a little late. If you can't do it, just say you can't do it and ask for help. Admit when you make a mistake. You know, practice the principles there. And as a result, in like a month, I was hired full-time, and I've been there for like the last 8-9 years now. And, you know, I love doing it. And my marriage is great. I married my best friend. She and I both were both in the program. We both work steps. And we have a great marriage. You know, my wife's my best friend, but also we work on it. And, you know, we go to marriage retreats during the year. We find some people who have been married longer than us or down the road from us who have good marriages and want what we have. Because I don't know how to be married. I'm a self-centered guy. You know, I don't know how to say, hey, honey, how you doing today? Well, how can I help you? That's not my normal reaction. So I need to learn from people who have been longer than me. And I was sober about 10 years living in Richmond, and I needed to change sponsors. It just wasn't working anymore. I don't change sponsors easily. I talked to a bunch of people I knew. I said, this is what's going on. I don't know what to do. I've had two sponsors in the 15 years I've been here. And I changed sponsors somewhere around 10 years. I lose track of time. And that was the best thing for me. And one of the first things he told me, he said, well, how's your prayer life? I said, well, it depends on what you mean by that. You know, I'm going to start justifying anything I can. And he's like, well, you pray in the morning. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, I do the old, God, you and me, let's go. You know, I'm walking out the door because I'm busy. You know, I got a job, I got a son, I don't have time to be doing this all stuff. He's like, why don't you start praying for morning and night? Why don't you spend more than 5-10 minutes doing it? You know, I have some suggestions for it, and let's just see what happens. And I'm like, all right. And because I never really did that before, you know. And so I started doing that. And, you know, halfway through the 15 days or so, all of a sudden I started being a lot more peaceful. Start a better frame of mind. I start thinking about God during the day. He's like, why don't you carry your medallions with you? You know, I got my 14-15 year chip. He's like, rub them together and you can think about God during the day, so it's not all about you. And I'm a sarcastic guy. I got a quick temper. All of a sudden, I have a little more peace. I'm not so quick with my tongue. I start thinking about God during the day. And it works so well, I haven't put 30 days together since then, you know, but it makes a big difference. And you know, he told me, you know, the founders of AA said prayer and meetings are probably just about equally important. And so don't just go to meetings, but make sure you're spending as much time in prayer. And I tell you what, if you're having, you know, my days and my life gets a little chaotic up and down, it's, you know, first thing I'll start asking myself is how my prayer life going. And usually it's not going that well. But then I'm trying to control my life and saying, hey, God, this is the way I think my life should be. This is the way it's supposed to be turning out. This is how this person's supposed to be acting. And all of a sudden I start bringing God back into my life, and all those issues go away. Nothing's changed. Just my reaction to that's changed. And I can't do that by myself. That's part of those things. Like, I don't know how to live life sober on my own. You know, I need God's help to do that. And he said, how you doing AA? I'm like, well, I'm judging people. He said, well, you weren't born with a gavel, so stop judging people. You know, stop. You weren't born with a badge, so stop policing AA. They don't care anyways what you think. And he's like, we're all God's kids. We're trying to do the best we can. No one's waking up saying, let's get marked today. I'm like, well, you don't know what they're doing. He's like, no, really. They're not coming out to get you. Because I'll test them every now and then. I'll say, hey, this is what they're doing. What do you think? So I want them to be all controversial. And he's like, they're all God's kids doing the best they can for free and for fun. And that's such a different attitude to go. I went to meeting my home group Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m. We don't get a lot of dead weight. We also get people who do all different types of stuff, which is fine. We're talking about powerlessness. We didn't already mention God. We don't already mention the steps. I got two reactions there. I can judge them all. Say they're doing it wrong. I can speak up and share, or I can say, you know, we're all God's kids doing the best we can. No one's intentionally coming here trying to screw this thing up. And it's my job just to share my experience, and it's their job to do their experience, and we'll see how we can go. But the idea is I want AA to be a place where it's fun to be here, where it's a family, you know. And I don't know about you, my in-laws are Jerry Springer show, okay? I got a mail order bride on that side of the family. I mean, it's... brothers I haven't talked in 20 years over something. And we go up there and it's all gossip and criticism. You know, I can easily be that way. I can get into it and say, hey, let me tell you what's going on. Look what they're doing. And he tells me, reminds me over again, you know, well, God, your job's to be sober and practice the principles. Principles are, we're all God's kids. doing the best we can for free and for fun. So stop taking people's inventory. Just reach out and be friendly. And all of a sudden I start doing that, you know what? I don't really get any resentments as much. I can just let things go off my back. I don't really care what people are doing in their program. That's between them and God. I'll tell you what I do. The people I sponsor, this is what we do, but works for you may not work for me. You know, Sam's going to sponsor people that I can't. You know, Jeff came down with me. He's going to sponsor people I couldn't touch. You know, we're all uniquely qualified to help different people. We're all trying to direct each other back towards God through these steps. And that made a big difference in my life because for years I was always worried, what am I going to do in 10 years? You know, am I going to have enough money? Am I going to be able to retire? What's going to happen? I played the what-if game all the time. You know, that's a terrible place to be. But I was always anxious and uptight. And he goes back and he says, well, how's your relationship with God today? And I'm like, well, I'm playing God, so it's not that good, right? And he'd be like, let's look at your track record. Has everything worked out for you? I'm like, yeah, so far everything's worked out. You know? It's like, why don't you trust God, take it one step at a time, do the next right thing, practice these principles, and amazing things are going to happen. I'm like, okay, you know? But I got to come to meetings in order to hear that. You know, my sponsor nowadays, you know, we do a text on the daily meditation about 4 or 5 times a day. I get someone's opinion on it, not mine, which is good. And it just directs me back to God. You know, if you came here when I got sober in 98, you said, you're in a relationship with God. I've been like, screw you, I don't really care. That's not my plan. You know, my plan is just somehow get sober and be able to make it through the day and be able to say, how are you doing? I can answer them somewhat honestly. My life sucks, but it's getting better. You know, that's all I would have been happy with. And all of a sudden, you know what? My relationship with God is the most important thing. You know, I'm married. I got a master's degree. I teach. I coach. And but I still go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. You know, I found 6:45 meetings work just fine. I hate mornings. If I could sleep until noon, I would. But it's not all about me. If I want to be a good husband, a good son, I can't say, hey, honey, I'm going to 4 or 5 meetings tonight at 8 o'clock. Why don't you take care of our son and child and all the stuff that's responsible around here, and I'll see you next week. It's not about that. I work my life's great. I go to 4 or 5 meetings a week, a lot more morning meetings and some lunch meetings. And, you know, I found out they're just as good as the night meetings. You know, all right, when I got sober, I'm like, oh, those morning meetings, those people aren't serious about sobriety. Got to go 8 o'clock meeting if you're serious. And I don't know where I heard that from, but, you know, I had my own rigid ideas. My way of doing things, my way of the highway is never good. And I sponsor a bunch of people now. And, you know, most of them are doing pretty well, one or two. You know, we're working on it. And I'm honest with them. I say, I love you to death. I'm with you. But you have 1 meeting a week, you ain't going to make it very far. And if I'm helping you, I'll be your sponsor still, but I'm not sure what we're doing together right now. He's like, well, you're helping me still. I'm like, well, I'll still sponsor you. Let me know when you're done with that 8-step list, and we'll get together. My way of doing things, so I'm going to get rid of them. I'm going to fire them. It makes me look bad. It's a waste of my time. And my sponsor goes, you might be the only one who can talk to him right now. At least he's hanging around. You know, you're one of God's kids. Would you close your door on God's kids? And that's not normal for me. And so I work with them. He says, I'm helping them. I say, that's fine. I'm like, look, if you find someone else that might help you better than me, go ahead. Find them. If not, I'll stick with you. But we need to do more. And I'll be honest with them. But it's a kind and loving way. And what I find is the more I can be kind and loving, I never get in trouble for being too nice. I always get in trouble for being too sarcastic, being too rude, being too judgmental. Then I got to make amends. But I've never once gone to work, washed my mouth, helped out others, and had to make amends at the end of the day. Always I go in, I'm short-tempered, telling people how they should be acting and what they should be behaving. And I need to come to AA and do that too. I don't just come to AA once a week and practice it and then move along. And so I've had this great gift of working with a sponsor who taught me those things. Got a home group. I love my home group. I got a job in the home group. My job just turned up. I put up chairs. But I need a home group. And I'm a big believer in structure. I go to Monday night, I'll be at Outlaw Safe Crackers. Tuesday morning, I go to 6:45 meeting. It's a big book. Thursday, I go to a noon meeting, and then Saturday morning, my home group at 7:30. And sometimes I go Sunday morning at 7:30. And the idea is I plan in every week when my meetings are going to be. And that's so different. It used to be when I was drinking, where do you feel like going tonight? I don't know. Where do you want to go? You know, and just kind of live by the seat of your pants with no structure. And if you showed up, people were glad. And if you didn't show up, people didn't care. But I was unpredictable. You know, I wasn't reliable at all. So now all of a sudden, I got structure in my life. And so my wife says, what are you doing tomorrow? I'm like, I'm going to the meeting. She's like, okay. She's like, well, when are you going to spend time with the family? I'm like, well, I got this time now. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm a good dad, I'm a good husband. Because if I come to AA and my family life's a mess, what am I teaching my family? You my AA doesn't really work. That's all they're going to care about. My son said, you're going to a meeting? He's like, yeah. He's like, good, you'll feel better and be happier when you come back. You know? That's what he knows of AA. You know, what a great reputation to have. You know, I work with another guy now. He said, I don't really believe in God. I said, that's good. We'll work from there. At least we can be honest. You know, as long as we can be honest here and be willing, we have a shot. You know, my whole life I've done things my way. I still argue the drop of a hat. I don't know. That's why I teach middle school. I think I fit right in there because we all get to argue. And I'll come home. My wife's like, I'm not one of your students. You can't argue with me. I'm like, but if I came here, it's the only place I've ever come where I've been perfectly willing to follow directions that aren't mine. Because I don't know how to live life sober. I've been sober 15 years. Married almost 7 or 8 years coming up. I don't know how to be sober this long. I don't know how to be married this long. Never been this before. So this is a whole new adventure. I know if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'll be in good shape. But I keep finding people who are ahead of me that want what I have. And so I keep finding people. I say, what are you doing? You know, let's talk. Let's get together. Whether it's my marriage or, you know, my career or whether it's an AA. And I stay busy. You know, I don't have a lot of downtime, but I don't need a lot of downtime either. But as a result of that, you know, my marriage is the best it's ever been. My relationship with my son's the best it's ever been. I'm sponsoring a lot of people in AA, and they all seem to be doing pretty well with or without my help, which is fine. And I'm active in AA. And as a result, my life seems to be getting better. And, you know, about a year ago, my wife said, you know, we're getting a little bored, we're getting a little older, let's go adopt a child. So I'm like, all right, we're going to adopt a child. And so we'll be flying over to China in like May. We're going to go pick up our daughter from over there. And if I was drinking, you know what? I wouldn't be able to do any of that. I wouldn't save the money. Wouldn't have the time. Wouldn't be interested because I'd be all about me. It would be, what are you going to do for me? You know, I don't feel like doing this. You know, and that's not my opinion. You know, God's brought around a change in my life where I'm willing to give. And I'm excited about going and doing this and having one more in our family. You know, she's like, it's an 18-year commitment. I'm like, what a great way to spend 18 years. We'll go travel the world again. You know, and we'll spend time bringing her up to know God, because we didn't. My son nowadays, he's got a better relationship with God than I ever had. And it's not because I gave it to him, it's because you guys did. We teach about God the way principles do here. You know, we say, God loves you. Here's what you do when you're wrong. And he goes up to people and says, I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? You know, so it's nice to see. And he's farther along spiritually than I ever was. You know, and that's what I want for him. I want him to come grow up with a God who knows and cares about him. Because I didn't grow up with that. And so as a result of AA, you know, my life completely turned around. I came here in December 1998. You know, if I just happened to be sober living by myself in a cabin, that's probably would have been enough. I was going to lose my job. I didn't have any good friends. You know, every morning I woke up, I'm like, man, that just sucks. You know, I wouldn't mind driving my car off the road those days and been gone. And like, those days were just tough, waking up day after day. Today, excited to be sober, excited for the next year. Can't wait to go home and see my family. You know, they're excited to see me. We're getting ready to go. We're going to go to the homestead for a couple days next week and have a good time there. My son's at camp. You know, I'm excited to spend time with my wife. She's not running away from me saying, oh boy, two more days. You know, because I practice these principles here, I've had a change of life, change of mind. And nothing else did that before but booze. Booze completely changed my mind from negative to just blacking out. You know, and AA and God has gone from miserable to happy to be sober. And so any problem in my life today, I know I need to do. I've got to go to more meetings, up my prayer life, and start calling some people. And as a result, everything works out. And my life does get better. And I told you, Sam, I'm a 45-minute speaker, so I'm done. Thanks for having me.